The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jory Slodkey from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Discover Magazine's double January-February 2020 issue, The Science That Matters 2020. We're continuing to read the 50 greatest science stories of the past year. We're continuing with story number 6, the CBD cure-all. No single compound expanded its market in 2019 quite like CBD did. This cannabinoid owns this year's bragging rights for the new product diversity after finding its way into water, lattes, jelly beans, hummus, cosmetics, and even doggy treats. CBD, or cannabidiol, is one of the dozens of biologically active ingredients called cannabinoids created by cannabis sativa plants. CBD only recently earned the most popular cannabinoid title. For decades, the crown more likely belonged to THC, the euphoria-inducing compound in marijuana. But not all cannabis sativa plants contain much THC. Those that do are considered marijuana, while those that don't are called hemp. Now, the Farm Bill of 2018 has made growing hemp as mainstream as farming corn and soybeans, as long as derivative products contain no more than 0.3% THC. The bill also spells out federal regulations on cultivating and producing hemp, and more hemp means more CBD. Currently, the only FDA-approved CBD-based drug is Epidiolex, which treats seizures from rare types of epilepsy. A study published in May found that synthetic versions of CBD may also work on seizures, based on preliminary studies in rats. What's more, researchers announced in June that CBD might even work as an antibiotic. But these results are still preliminary. The FDA has not approved any uses of CBD in food, beverages, or dietary supplements, meaning it's currently illegal for any companies to claim CBD has medical or therapeutic benefits. Outside of these uses, CBD is not federally regulated, so products available to the public can be all over the place in their claims. In September, the Federal Trade Commission sent letters to three companies selling CBD-infused products, including oils, capsules, and gummies, warning them that it was illegal to make health claims without competent and reliable evidence. Despite the lack of proof, some people are turning to CBD as a way to self-treat symptoms like anxiety and pain, sometimes as an alternative to opioids. In 2019, big-name stores like Sephora, Walgreens, and CVS started selling products containing CBD, and celebrities started announcing product endorsements. CBD is perceived as safe and attractive, and it's gaining widespread use, says Simon Harutonian, chief of clinical pain research at the Washington University Pain Center in St. Louis. But even though the market is booming, the quality of human research is spotty, he says. Researchers still don't know how CBD works in terms of enzymic pathways. That is, how the body eliminates CBD after intake. CBD is probably broken down in the liver, says Harutonian, but until researchers know which enzymes are involved, they don't know how CBD interacts with other drugs. It's also unclear how much CBD reaches the blood after it's inhaled or taken orally, and whether enough reaches the target tissues. Researchers still don't have reliable data on how often to administer CBD or in what doses. We are not in a very good position to make claims, Harutonian says. We don't even know what to tell people about driving impairment, whether they should avoid driving after ingesting a particular amount of CBD. Although some data support claims that CBD doesn't produce the euphoria associated with THC, it's still psychoactive, says forensics toxicologist Michelle Peace. By some accounts, CBD relieves anxiety and PTSD symptoms, which means that it has a psychoactive effect, she says. If CBD relaxes users or makes them drowsy, she adds, such effects can impair driving, similar to a sleeping medication that would impair the ability to operate a vehicle. As of 2015, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention had reported over 1,500 cases, 33 of them deaths, across 49 states and the U.S. Virgin Islands of a lung illness associated with vaping. As of this writing, the cause of the illnesses is still unknown, but it could be linked to nicotine, THC, CBD, or any of the other additives found in e-cigarette products. It's not the first time people have fallen sick after vaping. The CDC tracked an outbreak of poisonings in Utah in 2017 and 2018 from a fake CBD product that sent people to the ER with symptoms, including confusion, hallucinations, and seizures. Most of those poisoned had vaped the product. Peace had already been testing vaping products when someone contacted her after having a bad experience vaping CBD oil. He ended up with a high he hadn't wanted or anticipated. In work published in January in Forensic Science International, Peace and her team tested the CBD oil he had vaped, plus other products from the same company. They found the synthetic cannabinoid 5-FADB and dextromethorphan, an active ingredient in cough syrup, either of which could be causing some of the reported side effects. In the same journal in April, a European team reported a case study of an 18-year-old man whose death was related to smoking synthetic cannabinoids, including 5-FADB. I think the tangle of these two industries has created some public health, public safety, and public safety concerns, says Peace, who is also a professor at Virginia Commonwealth University. Once her CBD vaping study came to light, people started contacting Peace to say they too thought they had been poisoned by a CBD product. Peace and her team have been testing these products and call some of the stories pretty terrifying. But answers and data are on the way. Peace and her team are preparing results of their 2019 follow-up studies for publication. In May, the FDA held a public hearing on the safety and efficacy of CBD products. In June, a bipartisan team of legislators introduced a bill aimed to streamlining research. And in September, the National Institutes of Health announced $3 million in new research awards to investigate the use of cannabinoids and other cannabis-based non-THC compounds for pain management. More than 100 clinical trials are currently underway. There are so many questions, Harutonian says. We need to step back and do diligent work from square one. Number 7. Mini brains make new waves. Clumps of brain cells that are alive and practically kicking. That's what scientists created when they tweaked a method for growing brain tissue in a dish. Meanwhile, another team used a different approach to produce brain waves in similar lab-grown mini-organs. The two papers, published in March in Nature Neuroscience and August in Cell, modified existing techniques for growing cultures called brain organoids. In organoids, human stem cells are first coaxed into becoming brain cells, which then organize themselves into a three-dimensional structure similar to a developing brain. Until now, one limitation of organoids was a lack of blood vessels. This meant cells in the middle of the pencil eraser-sized blob died without access to oxygen and nutrients. But Madeline Lancaster, a developmental biologist at Cambridge University's Medical Research Council Laboratory of Molecular Biology and the Nature Neurosciences paper senior author, had an idea. Why do we just cut them open? By making thin slices separated by a membrane, the entire organoid could be exposed to oxygen and nutrients. Developing brain tissue is quite happy like that, she says. The cells not only stayed alive and healthy, but they also formed neural circuits like they would in a developing newborn, in a developing embryo. 2 weeks after the spinal cord and adjoining muscles of a mouse embryo were placed alongside the organoid, the muscles started moving, indicating functional connections grew between the organoid and the spinal cord. Lancaster jumped when she first saw the movement. The individual muscle units have to contract in a coordinated fashion in order for the whole muscle to move, says Lancaster. To see that actually happening in a dish, that blew me away. The scientists behind the cell stem cell paper took a different route. They spent 4 years optimizing the concentration and administration of proteins that would help the brain cells grow. Then they grew the organoids on top of electrodes, hoping the perfected protocol would allow neurons to form networks with detectable electrical activity, like real brains. After 4 months of effort, that electrical activity began to increase exponentially. By 9 months, it was 100,000 times higher than anything ever recorded outside the body. Next, the team compared the patterns and complexity of the activity with data collected from age-matched preterm babies. By 25 weeks, a computer program struggled to distinguish the organoids data from the baby's brainwaves. Allison Muoti, a biologist at University of California, San Diego, and senior author of the paper, was surprised organoids produce complex brainwaves without a complete brain or input from the body. It's as if they follow a script. These early stages of human development are totally genetically encoded, he says. The brain knows what to do, and the information is inside the cells. Both groups see their new techniques as helpful lab tools to investigate diseases and treatments. Lancaster has her eye on conditions where connections are disrupted, such as spinal cord injury and amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, while Muoti wants to make organoids from the cells of people with epilepsy or autism spectrum disorder to study their altered brainwaves. Now that the lab-grown neurons remain healthier for longer, Lancaster also hopes to examine later stages of brain development. Meanwhile, Muoti is already considering other tweaks. Asked if they can come closer to modeling a real brain in a dish, he says, "If you asked me 5 years ago, I would say it's impossible. And now I say it's inevitable." Number 8. Exploring the farthest world yet. On New Year's Day 2019, the far-flung New Horizons spacecraft, which visited Pluto in 2015, set a new record when it buzzed by the most distant object yet visited by humanity, a remote space rock nicknamed Ultima Thule. The object, officially dubbed 2014 MU69, orbits the sun a whopping 4 billion miles from Earth, deep within the realm of frozen rocks called the Kuiper Belt. That distance meant it took more than 6 hours for the spacecraft's signals, traveling at light speed, to reach Earth. The delay will only increase as New Horizons continues speeding deeper into space at 9 miles per second. It won't finish sending back data on the space rock until summer 2020. When the first images trickled in, they revealed Ultima Thule to be a snowman-shaped world. Since then, researchers have found it oddly flat, less a snowman and more like two conjoined pancakes poured too closely together in the pan. Its two lobes, now called Ultima and Thule, were likely separate bodies that collided gently in the distant past. The region around Ultima Thule was clear of any dust, moons, or rings. Those facts and the asteroid's fairly uniform makeup make scientists think it's led a quiet life in the far reaches of the solar system. Astronomers often consider space rocks the building blocks of the solar system. Since they've undergone fewer changes than the material in large, complex bodies like planets and moons, for researchers looking for a pristine example, lonely Ultima Thule may be exactly the right target. Number 9. Researchers react to human genes in monkeys. Scientists adding human brain genes to monkeys. It's the kind of thing you'd see in a movie like Rise of the Planet of the Apes. But Chinese researchers have done just that, improving the short-term memories of the monkeys in a study published in March in the Chinese journal National Science Review. While some experts downplay the effects as minor, concerns linger over where the research may lead. The goal of the work, led by geneticist Bing Su of Kunming Institute in Zoology, was to investigate how a gene linked to brain size, MCPH1, might contribute to the evolution of the organ in humans. All primates have some variation of this gene. However, compared with other primates, our brains are larger, more advanced, and slower to develop. The researchers wondered whether differences that evolved in the human version of MCPH1 might explain our more complex brains. Su and his team injected 11 rhesus macaque embryos with a virus containing the human version of MCPH1. The brains of the transgenic monkeys, those with the human gene, developed at a slower pace, akin to that of a human, than those in transgene-free monkeys. And by the time they were 2 to 3 years old, the transgenic monkeys performed better and answered faster on short-term memory tests involving matching colors and shapes. However, there weren't any differences in brain size or any other behaviors. But the results aren't what has the scientific community buzzing. Some individuals question the ethics of inserting a human brain gene into a monkey, an action Rebecca Walker, a bioethicist at the University of North Carolina, argues could be the start of a slippery slope toward imbuing animals with human-like intelligence. In a 2010 paper, James Sekela, a geneticist at the University of Colorado School of Medicine, and co-authors asked whether a humanized monkey would fit into its society or would live in inhumane conditions due to its altered genes. To justify the work, Sue and his co-authors suggested that it could provide insights into neurodegenerative and social disorders, but they don't describe what those disorders might be. I don't really see anything in the paper that would make me think that the experiment was necessarily a good idea, says Walker. Sue declined Discover's request for comment, but said in an article for China Daily, scientists agree that monkey models are at times irreplaceable for human research, especially in studying human physiology, cognition, and disease. And in the research paper, the authors contend that the relatively large phylogenetic distance, about 25 million years of divergence from humans, alleviates ethical concerns. Rhesus macaques are less like humans in terms of social and cognitive capacities than primates such as chimpanzees, which are more closely related to us. This greater evolutionary distance suggests it would be harder to wind up with a macaque that acts like a human. But that reasoning falls flat for Walker. It doesn't really matter when they became differentiated from humans on the phylogenetic tree, she says. They're talking about improved short-term memory, which would be putting them sort of closer to us in terms of those cognitive abilities. She thinks manipulating these skills makes the work ethically dubious and requires stronger justification. While monkeys and humans have similar genomes, Sue said in the China Daily article, there are still tens of millions of genetic differences. Changing one gene carefully designed for research will not result in drastic change. Sekela agrees that such a change may be minor. Still, he wonders about the possibility of finding a gene with a large effect on cognition. There's some risky elements to going down this road, he says. One needs to think about the consequences of where this is leading and what's the best way to study these kinds of questions. Walker also worries about where this work leads. Could we enhance human brains through these methods, she asks. While she thinks we're nowhere close to that yet, she notes that science can advance surprisingly quickly. For instance, CRISPR, the gene editing technique that once seemed far removed from human research, was used in China to edit the genomes of twins in 2018. It does feel worrisome to be doing this research in primates, Walker says, and then potentially thinking about how it could be used in humans. Number 10, a melting planet. From Antarctica to Greenland to the Himalayas, study after study in 2019 reported the world's ice is melting at an accelerated rate. New scientific innovations allowed researchers to better quantify mass ice losses, and their studies exposed startling trends. The new findings paint a troubling future for glaciers around the world. If current ice loss rates continue, scientists predict that the collapse of glaciers around the world before the end of the century. Wet paws. Sled dogs wade through a melting ice sheet in Greenland as researchers from the Danish Meteorological Institute travel to retrieve equipment in June. 3 months earlier, a team of scientists in Denmark, the UK, and the US had published a study in Science Advances predicting that over 25% of global sea level rise is due to the Greenland ice sheet melting. And Greenland alone could contribute 13 inches to sea level rise by the end of the century. Without substantial reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, the researchers project the island's ice will disappear entirely before the end of the millennium. Death of a glacier. What's left of the first Icelandic glacier lost to climate change, pictured above in 2018, was commemorated in 2019 with a memorial plaque. Glaciologist Odur Sigurðsson declared Ókjökull a glacier no more back in 2014, when the ice became too thin for glacial movement. But it wasn't until 2019 that members of the Icelandic Hiking Society, Rice University, and the general public installed the monument at its former site. The August induction of the memorial allowed the publication of an April Nature study that attributes 25% to 30% of the observed global mean sea level rise between 1993 and mid-2014 to glacier melting. The plaque installed in August 2019 at the site of former glacier Okyokul reads, "A letter to the future. Ok is the first Icelandic glacier to lose its status as a glacier. In the next 200 years, all of our glaciers are expected to follow the same path. This monument is to acknowledge that we know what is happening and what needs to be done. Only you know if we did it. August 2019, 415 parts per million CO2. Spy satellites. Recently declassified images taken by U.S. Cold War spy satellites have proved surprisingly helpful to glaciologists. Photos like one from the border of India and Nepal in December 1975 are a snapshot of the past extent of the Himalayan glaciers. In a June study in Science Advances, researchers used the multi-angle observations of these spy films to build a 3D model of the region in the last quarter of the 20th century. Their analysis shows that the Himalayas have lost twice as much ice in the last two decades as they did between 1975 and 2000. Ice melty. Melt season came early this year to Greenland's Russell Glacier. Researchers working on NASA's Operation Icebridge noticed in May. And new research suggests that could come from that could become a common occurrence across Greenland. Normally, snow covers and protects most of a massive ice sheet from the heat of the sun. But the snow ends at what's called the snow line, leaving the bare ice exposed. A March Science Advances study pointed to changes in Greenland's snow line as a factor accelerating ice loss in the region. Greenland's snow line moved at about 55 feet per year from 2001 to 2012, exposing more ice to the sun's melting rays. Moving on ice. Ice is always on the move. Knowing where and how fast it's going is crucial for predicting ice sheet stability, which informs predictions about melt rates and sea level rise. That's why researchers in California have created the most precise map so far of Antarctica's ice velocity, which they published in Geophysical Research Letters in July. But that wasn't the only Antarctic news in 2019. In a January study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, a different team found that the melting continent has contributed more than half an inch to global sea levels in the last 40 years, and it's now losing six times more ice annually than it did in 1979. Over-under. Ice sheets like LeConte Glacier in Alaska don't just melt on their open-air surfaces. They can also lose ice underwater. In a July Science paper, a group of researchers used a multi-beam sonar system, the same technology anglers use to find large schools of fish in the ocean, to directly measure underwater melting rates for the first time. The innovative approach shows LeConte could be melting 100 times faster than previously estimated by theoretical models, suggesting worldwide melt rates may be seriously underestimated. Number 11. The first gene-edited babies turn one. Often science moves ahead incrementally, yet sometimes it advances in dramatic leaps and bounds that can stir new hopes for medical benefits while shaking society to its very core. We saw both in 2019 as work using the gene-editing tool CRISPR gained momentum. The year opened with the scientific community scrambling to respond to the news that Chinese researchers He Jianqiu had used CRISPR technology to edit the genomes of human embryos. The experiments resulted in the November 2018 birth of twin girls, the first humans with genetically altered germline cells, which means their genetic changes are heritable and can be passed on to future generations. The National Institutes of Health, or NIH, a crucial public supporter of biomedical research, is among the many who consider such experiments both irresponsible and unethical. The NIH has not funded any use of heritable gene editing technologies in human embryos, and it has no intention of doing so. But NIH's strong stance against heritable gene editing does not mean that we think CRISPR has no role in the future of clinical medicine. This innovative technology possesses enormous potential for therapeutic good if used for making non-heritable genetic changes. In that approach, genetic material is altered only in relevant somatic or non-reproductive cells, so that there's no chance of passing those changes onto future offspring. NIH's highest priorities in 2019 included supporting research aimed at using non-heritable gene editing to help people with life-threatening disorders, such as sickle cell disease, HIV infection, cancer, and muscular dystrophy. Indeed, such applications may offer the best hope not only for treating, but for curing many of the nearly 6,000 human genetic diseases that still lack treatments. Now scientists and leaders around the globe have an obligation to consider the appropriate use, if any, of heritable human gene editing. This involves scrutinizing the safety of such experiments, including the risk of unintended mutations, as well as a clear-eyed analysis of actual medical need. In our view, the current arguments that the benefits outweigh the risks are surprisingly uncompelling, but our deliberations should not stop there. We must weigh the profound social, ethical, and moral issues associated with modifying the germline in ways that could change the human species forever. Given the significance of these decisions, in March, leading scientists from seven countries, led by Eric Lander and including CRISPR pioneers Feng Zhang and Emmanuel Charpentier, called for a five-year international moratorium on the use of gene editing to modify the human germline for clinical purposes. The NIH supports such a moratorium. Despite the calls for caution, some researchers are forging ahead. In June, Russian molecular biologist Denis Rebrikov announced plans to implant gene-edited embryos into women. Like his Chinese counterpart, Rebrikov planned to use CRISPR to target the CCR5 gene to protect against HIV. He later changed course to focus on GJB2, a gene linked to heritable hearing loss. Direct editing of embryos is not the only way to alter the human germline in heritable ways. In August, New York-based reproductive biologist Gianpiero Palermo went public with his plans to use CRISPR technology to target a gene that increases cancer risk in human sperm. But such moves continued to meet vigorous opposition. In August, a number of research groups working on gene editing therapeutics issued a statement asserting heritable gene editing is currently inappropriate for use in human clinical studies. That same month, a group of international research societies convened to discuss recommendations for appropriate research, which are slated for completion in spring of 2020. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization's new expert advisory committee, convened in the wake of Hayes experiments, sidestepped the issue of a moratorium at its August meeting. It did, however, establish a global registry to track all kinds of human gene editing research and offer consultation on governance of such technologies. We've run out of time for today's episode of Discover. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jory Slodke, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time, if you have any comment or questions, please call area code 919-832-5138. Again, that's area code 919-832-5138.